And as the one with the screen, I try to get some compost from our back 40 inches of yard, 40 more. There's a new economy now, like
the back 0.7.
I'm starting to have some compost. I really feel excited. I brought some big trash bags out there to get some compost from there. And I realized that if I hand out, this was about May, into the soil and the trees, there was nothing to pick up. It looked like there was leaves down there. But as soon as I put my hands on the leaves, they just literally crumbled underneath me. And I thought, wow, I mean, all those trees on the hillside had dumped buckets and buckets full of leaves by fall. Surely there would have been something left. It's amazing, isn't it? Through the winter, you've got this amazing process that's going on in this living hillside that's beautiful and complex and really just absolutely amazing, mind-boggling how these, you reach your hand down to the soil, there's you can find little critical critters in there that have been chewing up those leaves and decomposing them all through the winter. It just made me think again about how wondrous really the plant is and what an amazing home God has created for us that has such harmony and order. And at the same time, such fragility. When we read this passage, we are reminded of the chapter before, in Genesis 1, narrative of creation, the end there, in verse 31, it says, "And God looked upon everything God had created, and indeed, it was very good." It's very interesting. You have two scrolls there. "Indeed, it was very good." This earth that we live in is a well-ordered world, a well-ordered garden. And the chapter 2 and 3 version of the story, you know, we see a beautiful picture of this, a well-ordered garden, a place of shalom, right relationship, peacefulness, where boundaries are kept that protect the system from its vulnerabilities. And because of that, there's peace and wholeness. There's safe shelter for humankind. And this Advent season, we've been talking about seeking shelter. We're going to talk about that all 4 weeks of Advent, reflecting on Mary and Joseph's search for shelter and the bitter irony that the bearers of the Prince of Peace were actually refused shelter, were refused home and safe space in the world. I think there's some real deep poetry in this. Over the next 3 weeks, we're going to ask some questions. Are we still taking away Christ? How are the vulnerable being turned away? How are outsiders being turned away? How are those who are at risk being turned away? But before that, I think it's really important for us to ask this question. Are we really sure we know what shelter means? How are we going to offer shelter if we don't know what is required for us to keep house and keep house for others? And when we think of keeping house, a couple things should come to mind. First of all, I think that Genesis story about creation, because that Genesis story tells us the story of a garden, and it is our home, the shelter that God has provided for us. And I love that image of a garden, and I wonder, because there's lots of words in this, the Hebrew that the scribes could have written when they wrote the story down. They could have called it the Valley of Eden, right? They could have called it the Pasture of Eden, or the Fruitful Field of Eden, but they chose the word garden. What makes a garden different than a valley? Interesting, think about that. Why is it a garden? It's a garden because there's order there. There's a sense to it. It's a place of shalom. And what was humankind supposed to do there? We read that passage this morning, to tend the garden and keep it. Our job is keeping the house so that we can pass the house down. But many of you know this story really well. You know how the story ends. It couldn't read very long because humans didn't do a great job of keeping house. And of course, this is not a documentary narrative. Those of you who have been going to this church for a long time know that we don't need that story. So we think that this story is a palimpsest. It's a narrative that we can learn from every single minute of every single day as it affects our own lives, because we know that we ourselves lose the garden over and over and over again, just as we allow it was to ancient people. We lose the garden because we listen to the voice of an enemy who whispers in our ear, "God's hungry. boundaries don't matter. You can really do whatever you want in the garden. You will not die. You can do so much more than this with this. Wait a minute. Take whatever you want. It's okay. And when we listen, when we take that fruit, we lose the garden. Today, each one of these views of that, we're going to be having a kind of justice emphasis of the week. And if you look at the bulletin today, you'll see that the justice focus of the week is about our homes, earth. Today, starting today in Doha, where Qatar is going to be the 2012 United Nations Climate Change Kickoff. This is the name of that happens every year. There are gathered people, the leaders of the world, gathered to talk about what we can do about climate change. And there's a great video. If you look on the website of Democracy Now, about Brijendra Kachuri, who's the chair right now of the International Governmental Panel on Climate Change. And that group, you might recall, back in 2007, shared with a piece talking about work on their work for sustainable environment. But in that interview, I'm sure he reflects on last year's conference in Durban. And he expresses his worry about this plan. He expresses his frustration that world leaders are letting business do whatever it wants with the earth without any real recognition of the effects of that recklessness for future generations. And in the interview, he expresses hopes that this conference, beginning today, can be used as a time to convince world leaders of the considerable scientific evidence that shows that humans are dramatically and negatively impacting the health of this planet. But it also shows that he is very doubtful that that's going to happen. He's afraid that just as in Durban last year, the conference is going to be hijacked by political debate amongst powerful leaders who are really more interested in their country's GDP than in the health of the planet. We must stand down to our children, to our children's children. Many of us have heard that these Bible stories, you know, are old and unscientific and out of date stories like the Garden of Eden, but when I hear stuff like this, I think, you know, quite to the contrary. The Eden story in particular, and the story of our willful rejection of Shalom, is just as true today, I think, as it ever was. And in fact, we have the power to lose a lot more of Eden today than we did thousands of years ago when these stories were first being told. So back to that original question, are we sure we know what shelter looks like? And are we ourselves keeping house? And keeping house for the good of others? I think there's some real lessons. There's some real lessons that can be learned from the Eden story when we think about those questions. Lessons not only about how we need to keep the shelter that God has provided for us, this earth, but also about how we can keep house or create safe shelter for others who come into our lives. For example, I think one of the lessons that can be learned is that we need to recognize that shelter is a vulnerable thing. Shelter is a vulnerable thing. It doesn't run on autopilot. We have a responsibility to keep it. And that's what we hear from the story. That humankind is set in the garden to tend it and to keep it. It's what makes it a garden instead of a wilderness. That's true of this earth, but it's also true of our own homes. The shelter that we provide to others don't run on autopilot. The places we provide to protect our families have to be tended and have to be kept. Secondly, I think we can recognize that there are some boundaries which must be respected in order to live in a garden. Now, this is not an age in which we Westerners in particular like to talk about boundaries, but we like to imagine that we're very free. Some old, you know, ways of thinking that are restrictive and create boundaries and all that. But all of us can go deep inside. And from our own experience, that right relationship depends upon proper boundaries. I can't think of my experience in garden. I can't go out and change the oil in my car and take the drip pan full of old oil and dump it all over my garden and then go paint my living room. Excess paint I have, dump it all over my garden, and then empty out the fuel out there, just turn it and spray it and take it over, dump it all over my garden. And you imagine somehow miraculously that garden is going to yield fruit. It's just not going to happen because of some boundaries, because there are some limits. And those boundaries are not arbitrary. They exist as a function of the truth that we cannot, if we're going to live in the garden, treat the other simply as an object or a resource or a raw material which helps us fulfill our own desires, irrespective of the needs of that other. As in the garden, the other has to exist as a subject rather than just one of our objects to use. A subject that has value in its own right, regardless of what I need or what I want. A subject that has peculiarities and limits. And I have to respect those peculiarities and limits if I'm going to live in my relationship with that other. And that goes for our planet, and it goes for our relationships with people, doesn't it? Those two things. This is what we're talking about when we talk about love. Treating the other as a subject. And caring unconditionally for that subject, living within the boundaries implied and demanded by mutual care. And this is the irony of Eden. It's living within the limits of love that make us truly free. I think you know this in your experience. We can't expect everybody to play by our rules if we're going to be in our relationship. And we can't be transactional with people, expecting them to, be in our relationship with us just because we want something from them. Right? In a real relationship, you've got mutuality, you've also got a recognition of limits and boundaries. I've got my own limits and peculiarities. One of them is my pretty OCD. The details down on things that are going on. I like to know in advance what's happening. And there are other people in the world who just don't really care about mutuality. They don't really care about the details. They don't care about the details. They don't care about the details. They just work out in the end. My mother-in-law is a little out of touch. They just work out really planning things. Now, you've tried for years to change that other person to be more like you. Oh, thank you. We know it's not home, and we're always trying to impose our life on other people, and we're using other people and other things as objects rather than wanting to be in a subject. We know it doesn't create safe space. If you ever been in a relationship that's transactional, it doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel like at home. I remember the weirdest thing. The weirdest thing, I was at a soup family, and we invited over to a couple's house for dinner. And I thought, me, probably not. We go to that house dinner, and they invite us to two other couples and sit down and love again. And before we finish, I'm going to start with prayer. And then I just want to remind you that if you've been paying $4 each for the ingredients, you can pay now. You can pay some money later when and it'll be squared up. Okay, that's right. And it's not. This is so cute. You just say, okay, now I invite you to have dinner this month, so you're inviting me next month, right? And you're going to start that.
This is very weird.
It didn't feel like home. It didn't feel like home when you're in a transactional relationship like that. We just got honoring the other as other, inviting people, being generous. That's the kind of what God wants to say.
Create a place of shelter and safety. The theme of this Advent season is going to be seeking shelter, reflecting on the reality that, like Joseph and Mary, the vulnerable in this world are over and over again turned away. And in reality, the sad reality of shelter and safe place, safe spaces, are pretty hard to find for a lot of people. And so at the beginning of this Advent journey, I'd like to ask these questions. How am I keeping house? How am I tending and keeping this garden? Are we keeping house in our own homes and personal lives for the good of others? Inviting other people in our sights, allowing them to safe space. Are we able to save shelter by recognizing the fragility of that space and by caring for those who cross a path as sacred subjects with their limits and peculiarities which have to be respected and honored, living within the limits of love? The good news is this. We can open our doors. We can let other people in. This is the message of salvation, the message of new creation. We can learn to see and honor the other, to commit ourselves to relationships mutual care. And we can follow the way of Christ, loving and providing shelter, just as we have been loved and just as we have been offered home. No doubt we look around and we see very clearly that most of the world is still living in city. But we also know that the garden stores have been lifted by grace, and that grace is always calling us back. Oh God, you have invited us into your care and condition, respecting our peculiarities, inviting us to be more and more like Jesus, to live into that shalom and help us also to care for this shelter you provide. We provide shelter for others, we ask in Jesus' name.